All right, Ms. Spisak.
May it please the court, Mr. Tom Wright and Ms. Rachel Morales will argue for appellants. Mr. Thomas Hall will argue for appellee.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wright.
Justice Livingston, and may it please the court, I represent Shannon Pallone. I'm going to take the first 8 minutes of this time and also do the rebuttal, unless, of course, at that time the court would rather hear from counsel for Dr. Lonergan. My client is a physician's assistant. Physician's assistants are not doctors. They were not known to Texas before about a decade ago when the statute was passed authorizing physician's assistants. And their duties are prescribed by statute. Their duties derive from the doctor for whom they work. Those are delegated duties. Not every doctor works with physician's assistants, and not every doctor is qualified to give an opinion about the standard of care and the breach and causation of physician's assistants. And that's what we have here. The statute is very clear, and the case law makes clear, that not only does an expert have to give a report that shows he is qualified, demonstrates his qualifications, under the same statute now that is the statute that governs testimony at trial, this report statute directly refers to those sections and requires that the report demonstrate that the doctor knows the standard of care and knows the standard of care for this defendant. The Bowie case of the Supreme Court and Palacios both say this is defendant-specific. You can't just say, I know the standard of care for this group of people, and here's what it is, without explanation. Those cases also say you must explain why and how it is that you happen to know this. These reports are deficient in that regard. Neither report states affirmatively, I know the standard of care for a physician's assistant. Neither one of the reports says, I know that standard of care because I worked with physician's assistants, I taught them, my brother was one, whatever the basis was, there's no basis given in either of these reports about how they know that. The first report of Dr. Aiken seems to say, and I emphasize seems to say, that the standard is the same. He doesn't actually say that. But when he goes in these sections and sets out the standard for the physician's assistant and then the standard for the doctor, it's the same standard. But he doesn't even go so far as to say, to articulate that they are the same or why they would be the same. He doesn't say, I have reviewed the protocols of the doctor. I know what the physician's assistant was authorized to do. We don't know from this record and from this report whether the physician's assistant was even authorized by the doctor to do the things that Dr. Aiken said should have been done. And I say should have been done in the passive voice, again, because that's how his report is worded. While he's got this little subheading that says Shannon Pallone, everything under there is in the passive voice. This should have been done, that should have been done, and he does not purport to know or to talk about or to explain how he knows the standard of care for this PA. This court in the Shelton case that Justice McCoy wrote held that the affidavit there was insufficient because it did not state that the doctor was familiar with the standard of care for a hospital. Now, that's a summary judgment case, but we believe the standard, when you're looking at what an affidavit says or what a report says, is the same. It's a matter of substance. This is not a question about, you know, procedure or some of the formalities that you might have in a summary judgment. The substance of that affidavit was deficient because the doctor didn't say he knew the standard of care for a hospital. In the Simonson case, your neighbor court a few miles away said that the affidavit there did not say the expert knew the standard of care for a nurse practitioner, very close to what we have here, and found that that affidavit, that was a report case, I believe, not an affidavit, but in any event, that report did not give any indication of how that expert knew the standard of care for a nurse practitioner.
Okay, let's back up just a minute. You just implied a second ago that the evidence necessary to rebut a motion to dismiss based on an inadequate expert report was the same that you would have to meet in response to a motion for summary judgment. That's not what you meant to say, is it?
I don't believe I did say that. I said that when you're talking about the substance of what's in the report, the absence of a statement that I know that standard of care is not any different in a summary judgment proceeding than it is in these affidavit cases.
All right.
And there are other cases that say that. The Gray case out of Houston says that that was even a stronger case because the opinion said, I know the standard of care is the same, okay, for the doctor and for the hospital. But that court said that's not good enough because it's conclusory. You have to say why it's the same. So that's, you know, the other defect we have here on this particular point is that not only is there no statement about what the standard of care is for a physician's assistant, there's no statement of why either one of these experts knew that standard of care. If they're trying to say the standard of care was the same as for the doctor, they don't really come out and say that, nor do they explain why that would be. So we believe that that these reports should have been stricken and the motion granted. I know that Judge Davis is having his retirement party this afternoon, and so I hesitate to rain on that parade. He did say, however, that he's never granted one of these and probably never would. So I think the court can consider that approach when you're thinking about whether he exercised his discretion. We also have a bad causation problem here, and that is that neither one of these reports breaks out the time period for which my client might be responsible from the doctor. And let me explain that. My client, the physician's assistant, saw this lady one time in the fall of 2005. The doctor picked up and saw her half a dozen times until she was finally sent for surgery. Neither one of these reports says how much delay was occasioned by my client or whether that particular amount of delay, which could have at most been a few months, had any causal effect. The causation statements are very conclusory in general, and there's cases we've cited in our briefs, Taylor versus Krista Spohn and the Rittmer case, all say that the report has to identify how the failure of each defendant caused the damage that or the injury that the plaintiff is claiming. These reports do not do that.
Now, let me ask this. You are representing Pallone alone.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. So we know.
Okay. Right. Dr. Lonergan has Ms. Morales will be arguing for her. So this is not a case where the PA and the doctor were both on the same timeline. The PA saw the lady once and did not ever see her again. Then the doctor picked up. So it's by force of logic that you have to say, well, her time period ended. What was caused during that time period? These reports don't say that, and I see my time has expired.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wright. Ms. Morales.
May it please the court. I'm Rachel Morales, and I represent the appellant, Dr. Lonergan, in this case. Just to give a little bit of background to the court, this lawsuit was filed in January of 2008, and the expert report of Dr. Aiken was filed by Ms. Shearer, and the defendant timely filed objections to that expert report. And prior to suit, no valid medical authorization had been provided to us, so we did move for a statutorily required abatement, and the court arbitrarily denied that abatement period and forced us to argue our objections and overrule the objections and then deny the abatement period. We did go ahead and file the motion to dismiss, and then the court, as Mr. Wright mentioned, arbitrarily denied the motion to dismiss and stated on the record that he never grants these motions. So I just wanted to provide a little bit of background on that.
But doesn't saying that he never grants these motions after the motion's been presented, isn't that different from accusing the trial judge that he'd already made up his mind?
Well, I think it gives some insight to his reasoning, and that it wasn't necessarily based on any consideration of our argument, and it's just based on the fact that he doesn't like to grant the motions to dismiss. So, you know, it's some insight into the fact that, you know, was it at least questions whether he had considered our arguments or whether he just arbitrarily denied the motion.
Well, your brief doesn't question it. It states as fact.
Well, and we certainly didn't, you know, make that assertion that it was a fact. It's a fact that he stated that on the record, and it made us feel like, or at least wonder whether he had considered our arguments or whether he was just denying the motion because he doesn't ever grant them.
Thank you.
Does that comment touch top side or bottom of this lawsuit?
I'm not sure what you mean, Justice.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
One of the issues before the court today is whether the trial court abuses discretion in denying the motion to dismiss based on the fact that the expert reports filed in this case are inadequate because the causation opinions are conclusory. So that is the first issue that we have in the case. In Shelton versus Sargent, which this court decided, it was a motion for summary judgment case, but I think it's instructive because it gives insight as to what the court considers conclusory language. And as in this case, in Shelton, the plaintiff sued various healthcare providers based on a delay in diagnosis of breast cancer. And this court found that the expert's causation opinions were conclusory and unreliable. And in doing so, the court noted that the expert failed to explain the basis for the opinions that surgery and radiation therapy could have been avoided and that a lumpectomy would have been a good option for treating the plaintiff's breast cancer.
The fact that there's documented evidence of progressive growth and development of her breast cancer because of the 22-month delay is conclusory as to damages or causation?
Well, Your Honor, I think that there needs to be – I mean, I think that's a blanket statement that there was progressive growth.
Yeah. This is an expert report that you come out with initially. It's not – all it has to do is be a good-faith summary, I believe is the exact language.
Sure.
Okay, it's a summary.
Okay, but, you know, the opinion made by Dr. Aiken in this case is that the delay in the diagnosis may have impacted her morbidity and mortality and that it may have, let me find the language, increased her risk of metastatic cancer. Well, that's not even an injury that's relevant in this case. She doesn't have metastasis. So he says that He complains about the care, the care provided by Dr. Lonergan, and states that the delay in the diagnosis, because she was ultimately diagnosed with cancer, caused an increased risk of metastatic cancer and impacted her morbidity and mortality. Well, when did it do that, and at what point should he have diagnosed the cancer or sent her to a surgeon? We don't know because they don't say, and in all likelihood, they're not going to be able to say that because it's not supported by the facts in the records. Dr. Aiken doesn't say how an earlier diagnosis would have changed the plaintiff's outcome. There's no explanation as to how the delay caused the injuries and the resultant treatments as opposed to what was caused by the very fact that she has cancer, just the condition itself. There's no differentiation. And we've cited to a number of cases which state that the expert needs to provide a basis for their opinions. And one of the cases is Jones versus King. And in that case...
Well, for one thing, Sokol says that if she had been properly diagnosed and treated, she wouldn't have had mastectomies.
Yes, he says that, but he doesn't provide a basis for that. Who's to say that she wouldn't have needed mastectomies when she was diagnosed?
Well, because he says because she wasn't timely diagnosed, she needed them. He says, or that is, the other expert says, that the 22-month delay breached the standard of care. I mean, you add those two things together, and isn't that a fair summary of his opinions, a good faith effort?
I don't think so because it doesn't provide a basis. It's just a blanket statement. It's a blanket statement that a delay in diagnosis caused the need for mastectomies, but it doesn't explain why.
Well, the reason is because there was progressive growth and development of her breast cancer during that period of time, resulting in mastectomies.
But what? Okay, Your Honor, but the progressive growth in the tumor doesn't explain anything about the treatment options that would have been available had it been diagnosed in November 2005 versus when it was diagnosed in October of 2007. There's no explanation. There's no basis for it. It's just a blanket statement that had it been diagnosed earlier, you know, this treatment option would not have been or would have been available. And doesn't say, well, it doesn't explain why the outcome could have been different. I think that's the end of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Morales. Mr. Hall.
Thank you, and may it please the court. Tom Hall representing the plaintiff and appellee in this case. And I'm here to tell the court, and some of this has come out already, and I've got it written down, so I've got it right, but I think a fair statement of the issue before this court is, did Judge Davis abuse his discretion in ruling that the two expert reports taken together constitute a good faith effort to show that this case has merit and advises the defendants of the acts complained of? And I think that's a fair statement of the law. And if that is a fair statement of the law, I don't think there's any question that these reports do that. One thing I want to comment on before I forget it is that Pallone argued in her brief, both of her briefs, that these experts did not state that they were qualified to render opinions on Pallone as a physician's assistant. And I think that he's incorrect in that regard. And Dr. Aiken's report, on page 2, under his section called Qualifications, he makes the following statement. I am qualified to render an opinion on the physician and nurse practitioner care provided in this case because I'm an expert in the diagnosis of breast disease.
But where in here does he say, I'm familiar with the standard of care for a PA, here's what it is, and here's how it's breached?
Well, he uses the word nurse practitioner. He's talking about the PA.
I understand. Where does he say that?
Where does he say what?
I'm familiar with the standard of care for a nurse practitioner. Here's what it is, and here's how it's breached.
Well, he does say that in his report.
Okay, tell me.
Okay. He has got a section dedicated to Shannon Pallone, and it's on page 6 of his report.
Okay. I'm reading it. I've got it highlighted.
Okay. And he says what the standard of care is for Shannon Pallone in this case. And in this regard, There is conflict in the case law. I think the law is that the expert that gives the report has got to be able to be qualified in the medical issue in the case. Now, it's clear that a doctor can testify against a nurse. It's clear that an orthopedic surgeon can testify against a podiatrist. And I think that if the doctor says, I am qualified in the medical issue in the case, this is the standard of care, and this is how it's breached, that gets you there. That's what I think.
In a lot of these cases where somebody that's not a radiologist testifies against a radiologist, they're going to tell you in these reports, I believe, I'm not a radiologist, but I'm familiar with reading radiological reports because for the last 15 years I've reviewed them as part of blah, blah, blah. Here, I don't see any recitation of why he is familiar with an area of practice outside of his. For example, I have had a PA for the last 15 years, supervised one, and I know what the standard of care for them is because I think it's kind of obvious that they aren't going to be the same standard of care as for a physician, just like oncologists and radiologists don't have the same standard of care. So how do you address what he raised in that regard?
Well, I'm not sure I agree with Your Honor that the standard of care is different. I think that what both of these doctors are telling us is that if you undertake to diagnose and treat a breast mass, that you are held to that standard of care. And he tells us what the standard of care is. I think that's what the doctor's saying in his report. That is what he says in his report.
Okay, but if he was a PA
right,
or a nurse practitioner, I'm hearing that, but he's not. So it seems to me that he needs to establish why he's familiar with the standard of care of a practice that's not his own.
Okay. Well, I've got one more response to that.
Okay.
Other than, and I haven't got anything new to tell you about what's in the report, but I do have something to say about this Stacey Boone case.
Okay.
And it's in my brief, and I talked about it. But what happened in this case is exactly what happened in Dr. Akin's report. The report that was questioned in that case involved a physician's assistant as well. The doctor in his report says he is familiar with the standard of care and regularly provide and supervise care in connection with the treatment of patients situated like Nancy Everett Stovall in terms of physicians, physician's assistants, nurses, and hospitals. And that's all he says. He doesn't go into the same thing that Your Honor is inquiring about. And then he goes on to say the standard of care is X, and the opinion says that's good enough. The defendants may not agree that that's the standard of care, but if he says he's qualified and says what the standard of care is and how it's breached, that's all the report's got to do. And that's what that Boone opinion says. So, and I understand the concern. I mean, maybe he could have gone on and said, yeah, I've got physician's assistants. But I think that the essence of what he's saying and what he's telling us is that if you undertake to diagnose a breast cancer, you are held to this standard of care. It doesn't make any difference whether you're a physician's assistant or a doctor. And I think that's what the cases say, too. I think if the doctor opines that he is familiar with the medical issue in the case and says what the standard of care is for the medical issue, that's good enough. And I think this is clear, but the argument was made that there hadn't been a sufficient time period set forth in these reports to show that that there was sufficient damage. And Dr. Akin talks about that 22-month period. Dr. Sokol does clearly talk about the damages resulting from the delay in diagnosis by saying that he thinks that could have been treated without mastectomies. And I think that clearly shows damage to the case. And this Harris County Hospital District case that I cited in the brief is very much on point. It is very, very similar. It involves breast cancer with a shorter delay in the diagnosis than exists in this case. And the kind of damage that was damage testimony that was upheld in that case is very, very similar to the testimony of Dr. Akin and is less stark than the testimony of Dr. Sokol, who goes into even more detail. In that report, the doctor stated that at the first visit when the diagnosis was not made, after 6 months, the patient developed advanced disease with metastasis. And the doctor opined that because of this delay, that was the damage. And the court says that's enough. That's enough in terms of the causation and injury in the case. So I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Mr. Wright, rebuttal.
Thank you. Just briefly, in the Harris County Hospital District case, the report that came back was of a malignancy, and the claim there was that report was not given to the patient. Much different than what we have here. Ms. Pallone sent this patient out for a mammogram. It came back negative. And now they say, well, she should have sent the person out for more tests. The timing issue that I'm talking about is not so much the 22 months, but how much of the 22 months is my lady responsible for? She saw this patient one time and never again. And there's some ambiguity in Dr. Akin's report. He says that the doctor, Lonergan, saw the patient again in February of 06, but then elsewhere in his report he says it's more like May of 06. But somewhere in that time frame, in other words, some 3 to 6 months after my lady saw this patient for the first and last time, she picked up with the doctor. So if my lady is at fault, did she cause the entire 22 months? And if so, how? These reports don't address that causation as to my lady in particular. So she missed it if she missed it the first time, but then what about all this other intervening thing? So that's what I'm saying. The report is not adequate on causation.
What about the cases that say doctors may opine about nursing as opposed to PAs? Can we look to those cases?
Well, I think you can. The PAs and the advanced nurse practitioners are kind of covered in the same section of the statute. I think they've got similar duties. They're both delegated by a doctor. I'm not saying that Dr. Aiken could never be qualified. I'm just saying, other than generally saying I can comment on what happened here because I treat this disease, which is to be fair, that's their position. Our position is, like the Dallas court said, over a strong dissent, no, you've got to, just knowing about the disease doesn't mean you can testify about everybody who might have walked in the room and had something to do with it. You have to know individual by individual who that person is, what their duties are, and explain that you know that, and explain why. And these reports don't do that. You know, the statement that counsel started with about, you know, a good faith report and whatever, there's a lot of statements about the law in this area, a lot of them by the Supreme Court. That's one of them. That's not the only thing. The Supreme Court cases make clear, and most of the Court of Appeals are following them, that you have to explain this. You can't just say, I know this. These people didn't even say they knew it, and that's our problem here. And I'll turn back over whatever time I've got left. I thank you. It's been a pleasure being in Fort Worth.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wright, Ms. Morales, and Mr. Hall. We appreciate your briefing and your arguments, and your case is submitted, and you are excused.